At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are here to start off a new week on Football Full Circle, Sirius XM Channel 159. And that is all across the Sports Grid Radio Network as well. I am Ben Stevens, alongside the mastermind of the Pigskin. He is Joe Lisi. Lisi, the first weekend of college football, week zero underway on Saturday across the CFB slate. It started in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where Western Kentucky got the season started, all the way out to Dublin, Ireland as well, and we finish the night or early on your Sunday morning in the Hawaiian Islands between the Rainbow Warriors and Vanderbilt as well. Lisi, it was great to have college football back in our lives.
Oh, absolutely, and it didn't disappoint, Ben. Upset City in Ireland, 13.5-point underdog outright over Scott Frost and the crew, and Vanderbilt is looking like a bowl team after one game. Doesn't get better than this. We just wet the palate for week zero, now Labor Day weekend on tap, and I am chomping at the bit for college football, baby.
Lisi, we are going to break it all down as we get ready for week number one, the full college football slate. I'm sure you have seen all across social media today your favorite college football program and many others saying game week. That is how it feels across the country. But we got that small sample size, week zero. And Lisi, of course, the marquee matchup was that Big Ten opener in Ireland across the Emerald Isle between Nebraska and Northwestern. We broke down that game all summer long, all offseason long, last week leading into the opener in Dublin between Nebraska and Northwestern. The line closed around 12.5, 13.5 in favor of the Huskers. Lisi, Nebraska held two separate 11-point leads, one in the first half, one early on in the third quarter, and they lose both of them, ultimately losing the game to Northwestern 31-28. The Wildcats winning outright as that 12.5-point underdog. And Lisi, it was the same old story for Scott Frost in Nebraska as he begins year number five at the helm in Lincoln. 12 losses dating back to the middle of the 2020 campaign. All 12 of those losses, Lisi, by single digits. A combined margin of defeat of just 72 points. That's an average of 6 points per game. But Lisi, what we know now about Scott Frost is the same thing we have the last 4 years in Lincoln. He is 5-21 in games decided by a single score. And Nebraska loses by single digits again, booked as a 12.5-point pregame favorite.
Yeah, and it's a game of adjustments, right? You talked about both 11-point leads in the first half and second half, respectively. Opts for the onside kick. Bad decision, but at some point you have to regroup. And I broke it down, Ben, in terms of from 7:53 in the third quarter till the end of the game, Nebraska only totaled 85 yards. They were 0-5 on third down conversions. And their quarterback, Casey Thompson, 6 of 13 15 on passing attempts, which was 46%. I understand Mark Whipple is a new coordinator, but at some point, Scott Frost, as the head coach, has to get involved. And unfortunately, same old for Nebraska. They're in a game. They just can't pull it out and find a way to get it done. And unfortunately, that's the mark of a head coach. That's why Saban is so good. And unfortunately, Scott Frost hasn't lived up to expectations until this point in Lincoln.
Scott Frost is the common denominator throughout all of Nebraska's struggles throughout his tenure in Lincoln. He has fired and replaced completely his offensive staff for this year, bringing in Mark Whipple, bringing in Mickey Joseph. These are his players now. He has obviously been there through a full recruiting cycle. There are no excuses. The one common denominator is the man that looks Scott Frost in the mirror each and every morning. That would be Scott Frost, because in his 5 years now, four plus in Lincoln, Lisey, Scott Frost is 15-30 overall. He is 10-26 against the Big Ten. He is 6-18 against the Big Ten West. He is 3-21 when his team trails at the halftime break. He is 5-21 in games decided by a single score. And Lisey, per Dave Revson of the Big Ten Network, Nebraska is the first team in the history of major college football to lose seven straight games, with all seven losses coming by a single digit margin. This is exactly what we discussed, Lisey, leading up to this game. If Nebraska did not start hot, and they did, or if Nebraska did not pull away and seeming like they would walk to a cover of a 12.5-point spread, we knew they were going to get tight, and those ugly demons would come their way back and find Nebraska, so you feel like you're living in the Twilight Zone, and that's what we saw in Ireland on Saturday.
Absolutely. It's amazing that Nebraska comes right out of the gate and loses. What is the mental resolve of this team going forward? Do they implode, or do they get off the mat and bounce back in a big way, Ben? That remains to be seen.
That will be the biggest question. Nebraska has an FCS opponent up next back in Memorial Stadium in Lincoln against North Dakota. But the 7.5 win total, Lisey, if you took the over expecting a win at the very least against Northwestern, you're not feeling very good following week zero. Plenty more from college football up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Week zero of college football is in the books. We recap everything here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Alongside Joe Lisey, I am Ben Stevens. Lisey, let's dive back in to Nebraska and Northwestern. We paint the picture on Scott Frost and what his time, the 4+ years now in Lincoln, has looked like. It came to a head, the epitome of what Scott Frost has done, to find his football teams in ways of losing games, came down to when Nebraska took a 28-17 lead around 9 minutes remaining in the third quarter against Northwestern on Saturday in Dublin. They took a 28-17 lead. They had scored two touchdowns within a 35-second span to go back up, Lisey, by two scores. There was still 9 minutes left in the third quarter. That means there was 24 minutes of actual game regulation remaining. And Scott Frost thought to himself, let's go win the football game. Let's seal the deal with 9 minutes remaining in the third quarter. He tries an onside surprise kick. Northwestern is not fooled. They recover that onside kick. And five plays later, Lisey, they promptly score to make it a 4-point ball game once again. From when Nebraska scored with 9 minutes remaining prior to the onside surprise kick, they never scored again. The final 24 minutes of regulation remaining. What did you make, Lisey, of the decision by Scott Frost to try the surprise onside kick?
I don't have a problem with the onside kick. You try to put the dagger in the opponent, right? But if you're going to do that and roll the dice, you have to actually be prepared for the worst-case scenario. And what that means is now you rejuvenated Northwestern, and all of a sudden Ryan Helinski went right down the field, stuck it in. It's 28-24, and the offense couldn't get back into sync from that point on. They became very conservative. They weren't aggressive after that point. They were put into predictable long third downs. touchdowns that put pressure on their offensive line, and that falls again on Scott Frost. As bad as maybe of a game as Whipple called in the second half, Scott Frost has to take the reins of that team and say, that was my decision. Let's go. Let's get it into gear. And he didn't do that. You lead by example. And that's why I talk about Nick Saban being the best, because Nick is great at projecting. He understands when the momentum has shifted, and he's not waiting until after the fact that you're down 31-28. He's taking the necessary steps to make sure that you don't fall behind. And it's one thing to roll the dice, but you have to get off the mat and then readjust. And that's the biggest thing in terms of college coaches. It's great when the game plan goes well, but when it doesn't go well, how do you adjust from an X's and O's standpoint at halftime and in game that separates the good from the elite? And unfortunately, Scott Frost might be a great head coach, but an in-game coach, he's terrible.
I don't think he's a great head coach. I think we saw the epitome of Saturday of what Scott Frost will be remembered by for his time in Lincoln. When that ultimately comes to an end, I think rather soon. He is 3-21 when his team trails at halftime. Obviously, he does not make any impressive in-game adjustments. Lisi, I think the decision for that surprise onside kick was one of the worst I have seen by a head football coach in some time. And here's the reason why. In life, you often do pros and cons lists, right? For whatever it might be. What is the absolute best benefit of this? How many pros can I stack up in this 50-50 decision to see if it is worth taking that risk, as opposed to all the negatives that might outweigh any of those positives? What are the pros of Nebraska recovering that football? They get the football back. They're up by 11. There's still 9 minutes remaining in the third quarter. There is no guarantee that starting with the football in their own territory, they end up getting any semblance of points at the end of that drive against Northwestern's defense. What are the cons? Northwestern recovers the ball in their own in your own territory now and needs just 40 yards of field to go make this a single-digit game. And there's still more than half of the second half remaining. There was still 9 minutes in the third quarter. If there were 9 minutes left in regulation, maybe that's the knockout punch, but I still think that's a really, really bold decision. And it's more of the epitome for me, Lisi, of the Scott Frost era, because Scott Frost came to Lincoln, and I worked in Omaha, Nebraska when Scott Frost was hired as the head coach of Nebraska's football program. I said, Lisi, in the immediate breaking news coverage that we had at the local CBS affiliate, the station where I worked in Omaha, came MTV 3 News Now, I was anchoring that coverage. I said, Scott Frost is the prodigal son. If anybody is going to return Nebraska to its glory of the 80s and 90s, it is going to be the quarterback that led them to their last national championship in 1997. If it is not Scott Frost, I don't know who it is. I can say with certainty now, Joe, it's not Scott Frost. Because in the 5 years that he has been there now, nothing has changed. They have played the same brand of football. Mistakes, penalties, weird decisions in special teams that have led to them ultimately losing football games. And when Scott came in, he blamed the Mike Riley era for a lot of the damage control he needed to do to revamp that roster. They were not physical enough to have success in the Big Ten Conference. They were not creative enough to have success in their offensive play calling in the Big Ten Conference. His team got physically manhandled at the point of attack by Northwestern in the late portion of that fourth quarter into that second half that iced the game away for the Wildcats. Northwestern ran the ball, Lisi, on 15 straight plays to end out the game prior to taking the victory formation on their final drive, and they manhandled Nebraska on the line of scrimmage. They manhandled the Huskers at the point of attack. And if you were to tell Nebraska fans you would get manhandled physically by Northwestern, they would say, let's stop the football program right now.
Well, here's the thing, and I understand what you're saying, but it wasn't just Mike Riley. I'll take it a step further. It was Bo Pelini. That regression happened under Bo Pelini and then continued under Mike Riley. Go back to when Bo Pelini had the defense. Yeah, they won 9 games. Everybody talks about that, but Melvin Gordon is still running in terms of Madison, Wisconsin, in terms of that defense. It started under Bo Pelini, continued under Mike Riley, and Mike Riley's last year, Ben, when they went to the Music City Bowl, that that defense was giving up 195 rushing yards per game. So I give Scott Frost credit that, yeah, he had a bad ship in that regard, and he's gotten the defense a little better. But you have to elevate the team back to the old days. That's on him. I agree with you 100%. But at the end of the day, it's status quo. You have to take chances. You can't go into these games knowing Pat Fitzgerald is way too good of a head coach to go in status quo. He had to take risks. He lost. Now he has to live by them. But at the end of the day, he didn't adjust. So again, I don't have a problem with the onside kick. It's what he did and how he motivated his team after the onside kick that I'll have to live with the rest of the season if he's still Nebraska's head coach.
See, I do have a huge issue with the onside kick because I think Pat Fitzgerald coached an okay game, but he coached a game that was better than Nebraska by saying the Huskers lose these football games that are tight, that are close, that are competitive. We need to make them come beat us, and they could not. And they didn't even get close, frankly, toward the end as Northwestern outscored Nebraska 14-0 from that 9-minute mark in the third quarter, 14 unanswered, and dominated the Huskers at the point of attack. 214 rushing yards for a Northwestern offense that put up 31 points. Lisey, Northwestern scored 17 points at the break. They failed to score 17 points in seven games a season ago, and they did that to Nebraska's defense, who looked washed and dominated at a lot of those points in the second half, in my opinion. As it plays out, Northwestern is now a perfect 1-0 to start the year. Nebraska is winless, 0-1. The Huskers entered the year with the second best odds to win the Big Ten West. Now they have the fifth best price at plus 750. An even year, Northwestern is up from 100-1 to 26-1 after starting with a divisional win. Scott Frost, 6-18 in his time in Lincoln against the Big Ten West division. Plenty more from around week zero in college football. We're not done yet with the CFB recap up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. We have spent our time focusing on the Dublin debut, a Dublin debacle for Nebraska to start off the 2022 college football season. Week zero in Ireland. Again, Northwestern wins outright as a 12.5-point underdog. The final score, 31-28 in favor of the Cats. Two Big Ten West teams, Lisey, that kicked off the season on Saturday, but there was a third in action as well. Year number two of the Burt era, Brett Bielema's time as the head coach in Champaign for the Illinois Fighting Illini. And they made it look easy against Wyoming on Saturday at home. The Illini win 38-6 over the Cowboys. Chase Brown was dominant, 19 carries, 151 yards, two touchdowns. Tommy DeVito, the Syracuse transfer, very efficient, and Illinois easily covers with that 22-point win. Lisey booked as a 13.5-point favorite.
Yeah, that offensive line got healthy in a big way, right? That was the biggest thing for Illinois at the start of the year last year, the consistency of the offensive line. They started to develop midseason, put up 300 in the 9 overtime win over Penn State, and it continued week one against a physical and athletic front seven in terms of Wyoming. And more importantly, that secondary played very well. They forced Andrew Peasley into short intermediate throws underneath coverage. I said it last year, last seven games of the regular season, they only gave up .145 in terms of opposing quarterbacks in terms of the passing game. If that continues, they're going to be a contender in terms of the Big Ten this year and potentially might have an upset under their belt. Now, short week this week with Indiana on deck, they face off against Connor Bazelak and Sean Shivers, the former Auburn running back, but they match up very well against Indiana. Indiana couldn't run the football last year. They have a dominant front seven as well, Illinois, at least early on. If they can get some quarterback pressure in this ball game, I think they're going to be a live dog in this matchup early in the week here.
I would agree. It's a Friday night game in Bloomington, Indiana. The Hoosiers right now booked as a 2.5-point home favorite. Illinois last year, 7-2 against the spread in Big Ten games. Booked as an underdog in eight of the 9 conference games last year, and covering in 6 of those 8 as an underdog, winning outright 3 times, all booked as a touchdown underdog or more. So Illinois has been a very good team, and we'll see how that plays out against a Hoosiers team that was a strong disappointment in 2021 following a wildly successful 2020 campaign. In the history of college football, Joe, IU is the losingest program ever. 695 all-time losses. There is a chance, as the odds would indicate, with Indiana only having a win total of 4.5, that Indiana is the first ever team at the FBS level to lose 700 games in the history of its program. It starts on Friday night for Indiana against Illinois. Joe, elsewhere around week 0, we saw some other Power 5 conferences get underway. The ACC had both North Carolina in action at home against FAMU in a game that almost didn't happen and then eventually did. And then Florida State opening up against Duquesne. Of the ACC teams that you saw on Saturday, Lisi, anything stand out in particular?
No, I mean, obviously, I mean, there was no doubt that North Carolina was going to win. Would they cover that huge number, that balloon from basically 35.5 to 44.5 by game time? And may look good. You know, at the end of the day, taking over for Sam Howell, they need consistency, right? The kid throws 5 touchdowns, and all I saw all over Twitter was how bad North Carolina looked. They were sloppy. It's a new scheme. You have a lot of new playmakers involved. That was expected against a team that couldn't even make the trip at the early part of this the week, right? We didn't even know if they were going to be there, FAMU. So at the end of the day, I don't put a lot of weight into the win over North Carolina, but I was sort of impressed again with Florida State. Now, I talked about them earlier, but their ability to run the game, it's going to be very critical in this matchup playing in New Orleans against LSU and Brian Kelly, that Florida State and Jordan Travis got into a rhythm. I like that heading into this Sunday night battle where they're 3.5-point underdogs, right? Jordan Travis, 207 yards through the air, but that offensive line got healthy. Even though it was Duquesne, I think that's going to be a factor, not just against LSU. Whether they win or not is insignificant to me. It's what they do against the likes of teams like Syracuse, Louisville, Wake Forest, Boston College that they're going to have to go up against. I like Florida State, so as long as the offensive line can pound the rock the way they did against Duquesne, whether they beat LSU or not, I think this team has the potential to be an 8-win football team at the very least and potentially strike a 10-win season this year.
You've talked about Florida State often in this offseason. That line right now for FSU in week number 1 on the road to Baton Rouge on Sunday night. LSU, a 3.5-point home favorite at the moment against FSU. Neither team, though, Lisi, covering a very large spread in their favor. North Carolina ended up as a 44.5-point favorite. FAMU kept that close throughout a majority of the first half, that we had some weather, some storms passing through Chapel Hill, kept that game maybe a little bit sloppier on Mac Brown's team's end. And Florida State, Lisi, closed as a 46.5-point favorite against Duquesne. They win by 40. Nobody's going to hold that against FSU after dealing with some weather of their own there in Tallahassee at Doak Campbell to start off the season. Lisi, we saw another Power 5 team in action on Saturday, late Saturday night, out in the Hawaiian Islands. Vandy is the highest scoring offense of all of college football so far this season. 63 big ones scored against Hawaii in a 63-10 win. Lisi, Vandy easily covering as a 9.5-point favorite, as you predicted just last week.
Yeah, but it didn't start out like that, right? They fall behind 7-0. I'm like, here we go. Get on. Uh-oh. Get off the mat, baby. And then we had an actual turnover. We tie it up at 7. We get the turnover. We take it to the house. And then we never look back. The physicality of Vanderbilt's offensive line took over. We talked about the Timmy Chang situation. 20-plus players moving on. New offensive defensive schemes. One defensive starter coming back for Hawaii. And one of the worst third-down defenses in all of college football last year, 46%. And Vandy had one of the best at 35%. So that was the matchup. They deserved deserve to win. They're a team that could definitely get over the 2.5. Let's keep it right in front of us, Ben. We talked about it. 2.5, we just got to get to 3. Get the win this week over Elon. We're not trying to go to a bowl. I don't care if they go to a bowl. Just get over the 2.5 wins. Make us a believer because we have everything in front of us. I want to see them develop in the passing game. They didn't get Shepard involved enough, but they didn't have to because of how that offensive line played. And when you total over 600 yards, a dominant effort. It was a business trip. They're motivated. They could be a tough out in terms of double-digit spreads this year, so keep an eye out for them.
And we saw that last year, right? Lisey Vandy covering in 4 straight against SEC opponents to end the year. Yes, the Commodores have yet to win an SEC game in each of the last 2 seasons. We'll see what their SEC slate has in hold, or in store, rather, for Vanderbilt this year. But when you have Mike Wright play the way that he did, Lisey, 13 of 21, 146 yards through the air, 2 touchdowns there, ran it for 163. You, me, Kevin Walsh on College Football Today on Saturday looked at that Mike Wright rushing prop, closed around 46.5. He finishes with a 163 and 2 rushing scores, an 87 yarder as well. This Vandy team could be a pesky one in the side. Clark Lee got a lot of slack, I think, this offseason, Lisey, for saying at SEC Media Days that one day Vanderbilt is going to be the best team in all of college football. At least as of right now, Vandy has the best record in the SEC and is the highest scoring offense in all of college football. Lisey, let's go around the Mountain West. We saw a lot of Mountain West teams in action this weekend. Nevada against New Mexico State. Hawaii, of course, in that game as well. Utah State was tested very early on against UConn. The Aggies already looking forward to this upcoming Saturday in Tuscaloosa against Alabama, booked as a 39.5 point favorite. Utah State, though, Joe, was booked as a 25.5 point favorite against UConn. They do not cover that number, but they do win 31-20. The reigning Mountain West champs start off the year undefeated. But Lisey, were you impressed by the resolve you saw out of Jim Moore Jr. coaching his first game for the Huskies?
Absolutely. I mean, this was a team that was much improved. I give Carver credit in terms of he said that he has a contact, much improved on the defensive side of the ball. They showed that. And Jim Moore Jr., Ben, how about this? They didn't rush for a game of over 200 yards in 16 games. Go back to 2019 was the last time they did it. They put up 326 against UMass. They rushed for 245 Saturday night against a very physical Utah State defense. That was a gutty effort. They didn't get the win, but they got the cover. That's all that matters. We thought Utah State would start slow with the potential look ahead this weekend against Alabama. Now you saw money pour in. They're already 38.5 point underdogs. They ballooned it up to 41.5. I jumped on it late last night because I think Utah State's going to be well within the number. We'll see how it plays out. And I'll just tell you this. Florida State was the only team this weekend to lose the turnover battle and still win the game. You still got to win the turnover battle to get W's in college football.
That's absolutely the case. Lisey, a couple of Conference USA clashes. North Texas on the road in the Sun Bowl, only 1.5 favorite. They easily cover that number due to Mean Green on Saturday night, winning that game 31-13 over Texas El Paso. And Florida Atlantic routing Charlotte, dominating the game throughout, 43-13. FAU covering as a 7.5 point favorite. Plenty more from football full circle. We flip it over to the NFL up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back on Football Full Circle, live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. Lisey and I have recapped all of week 0 pretty much of college football. We'll put that away for right now, focusing on the finale of the NFL preseason, Lisey. Week 3 ended yesterday. That means the preseason is done. It's finished. It's over. We turn our attention to when football actually counts in the NFL. The regular season now just 10 days away. It starts at the site of where last season ended, Super Bowl 56, in the home of the Super Bowl champs, the LA Rams, hosting the Buffalo Bills. That line is on the move. Buffalo now a 2.5 point favorite. They were only laying 1 on the road early earlier this offseason. Lisey, let's look back on week three of this NFL preseason. Quarterback competitions dominate the headlines throughout training camp, throughout preseason. And we saw that play out, namely, in two places, Pittsburgh and in Seattle. The Steelers wrapped up their perfect preseason, going an undefeated 3-0 yesterday, hosting the Detroit Lions. And we saw all three quarterbacks in that room compete yesterday. Mitchell Trubisky got the start, played most of the first half. Kenny Pickett then came in, got a good majority of work, and even Mason Rudolph got some air time yesterday. Trubisky, Joe, .160 through the air. Looked probably the best he has all preseason long. Do you think he has solidified the starting spot in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. I, as much as the media made that there was a quarterback competition, I don't think there was one. I thought it was Mitch Trubisky's job to lose, and he hasn't done anything in the offseason or preseason to make me think he's not going to be under center week one in Cincinnati, especially when you're going up against the AFC champs, right? 6.5-point dogs. You want to make sure that you have experience going in that environment. As good as Pickett might have looked with the second and third teamers and the backups, it's Mitch Trubisky. He stepped up. He's mobile. And that offensive line, I got to say this, they have been atrocious in terms of the preseason so far. The consistency of the running game is not there. If they start slow in the running game with Najee Harris, you're going to need Mitch Trubisky there to pull this ball game out, especially week number one. So I think it's his job to lose. I'd be shocked if Kenny Pickett is named the starter by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I think it is Trubisky, and I think we'll get that confirmation here very, very soon. Tomorrow afternoon is a big deadline in the NFL, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Teams need to make their final roster determinations, the final cuts to get down to that 53-player roster for the National Football League entering the regular season. So I think once that happens, Joe, and the depth chart has been ironed out in a lot of other places for the Steelers, we'll get that word on the QB position sometime later this week. And I think we all expect it is going to be Mitchell Trubisky, which is very interesting because Kenny Pickett is one of the co-favorites alongside another Steelers rookie in George Pickens at +900 to be offensive rookie of the year. And that number, Joe, will go hand in hand with when or if we even see Kenny Pickett make a start for the Steelers this year. That will be the next conversation. Not is Kenny Pickett the starter? Did he take the job from Mitchell Trubisky? It's when that might happen, if it even does, throughout this regular season. We do know, though, Joe, who the starting QB is set to be in Seattle. The Seahawks ending their preseason Friday night in the Star in Dallas. They lose 27-26, booked as a 7-point favorite. But following that game, Pete Carroll made it clear. Geno Smith will be the starter week number one for the Broncos, or for the Seahawks, I should say, 2 weeks from tonight against the Broncos on the first Monday Night Football game of the year when Seattle welcomes back Russell Wilson. Lisey, do you agree with Geno Smith being QB number one in the Pacific Northwest?
I don't now. I understand that Drew Lock had a terrible game against Dallas and he had three picks. Two were his fault. One bounced off the guy's helmet. You can't do anything about that. He hit him right in the face, you know, in terms of that interception. But I understand that. Geno Smith, cleaner with the football in the preseason. Drew Lock, I think, again, has the best arm out of both quarterbacks. I think that's what they're going to need to challenge defenses over the top to loosen up the front seven to ultimately run the football. But Pete Carroll made a decision. I think, listen, we know what you have with Geno Smith. Pedestrian, short to intermediate throws outside the hashes. I don't expect him to be, you know, hitting a DK Metcalf streaking down the sidelines 50 yards down the field. We'll see how it plays out. Still high on Seattle, still high on the running game, and I'm still high on Pete Carroll. You want to give me even 7 week one with Geno Smith at the helm? I'm not backing down. I like Seattle against Denver in that matchup. Ultimately, I think Drew Lock will be the starter as the year progresses, but that we'll see how it plays out. I still think this team has the foundation to definitely get over the 5.5 and potentially be a 7 or an 8 win football team this year.
The foundation, based on track record in the Seattle Seahawks organization, is certainly there to go over 5.5. It's a number they have gone over from that win total perspective, Lisey, in 12 consecutive seasons. Listen, it's a very new era. It's a new roster for the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson, who was the quarterback for the last decade, is now going to be lining up in the opposing locker room for that week one opener. The line now at 6.5 in favor of the Broncos on the road in Seattle amongst the 12 men on on Monday night, 2 weeks from today. But it's a number, though, Lisi, that begs the question, is Pete Carroll a good enough football coach? Is there enough talent other areas on the roster to make up for the lack of perceived quarterback play in Geno Smith? He's about to enter his ninth year in the league. He played in four games last year for the Seahawks, made three starts. Lisi has only played in five games in the last 6 years, so it's interesting to see Geno Smith now getting that opportunity. We'll see. We know the sample size is much larger on Geno Smith. There is still maybe that sliver of hope, although it wanes thin for Drew Locke, but we'll see when that takes place this season. Drew Locke, 13 of 24, 171 yards, a touchdown, but three interceptions, played well into the fourth quarter for the Seahawks in their preseason finale against the Dallas Cowboys. Now, Lisi, there might not be a quarterback competition in New York, at least for the Jets starting things off, but maybe there should be. Joe Flacco out there in the Big Apple battle against the New York Giants and the preseason finale for both New York teams looked awful. He played four drives. He was 7 of 12, 76 yards, threw a terrible pick six interception to the New York Giants. Meanwhile, Mike White, 13 of 17, 170 yards, two touchdowns. And Chris Streveler, Joe, is Mr. August. He leads three comeback victories for the Jets in all three preseason games through the game-winning touchdown pass yesterday to Calvin Jackson on a fourth and goal from the five with just 22 seconds remaining. He has been that guy for the Jets this year. I know they're going to go with Flacco week number one in a revenge spot against his former team in the Baltimore Ravens, but as they wait the return of Zach Wilson, who will certainly be that QB when he is back healthy and able to get out there, Joe, it feels like they might have better options than Flacco.
Oh, without a doubt. I said it's Mike White, and I know Streveler has played well, and this kid's a gamer. He's like an old-time Bucky Richardson type of quarterback. He reminds me of Tebow a little bit, the way he lumbers and, you know, just runs the football. I can't give the reins to Streveler. I know he's a gamer, and I know he stepped up against third-teamers, but Mike White is the guy. I mean, if we're looking for a quarterback to potentially get wins, especially in the month of September, at least 2-2 for the New York Jets, and have Zach Wilson maybe in the start of October, to me, it's Mike White. And he did it against Cincinnati, 407 yards. I know the second game he didn't step up, but this guy at least has a past where he led FBS, who was one of the top quarterbacks with Jeff Brom back in the day for the Hilltoppers. He's a good quarterback. He makes solid decisions, throws the football with anticipation, and we know what you have in terms of Joe Flacco. You might as well put a bag of potatoes back there. He is so immobile, it's going to be like Andy Dalton 2.0 for the Bears last year. If they go with Joe Flacco, I'm selling the Jets the whole first month of the season. I'm telling you, Ben, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't even know if we're going to get to the first full month of the season with Joe Flacco as the starter. Again, there is still maybe some hope that Zach Wilson can be ready week one. Obviously, you don't rush him back from the torn meniscus surgery, and it was a bone bruise as well, so you need the time to recover from that litany of injuries. But it's an interesting move, Lisi. It is a very interesting move. I know you don't want to start any narratives that detracts from your second-year quarterback, but I'm not sure Joe Flacco is your best answer right now. I hope Chris Streveler gets an opportunity somewhere based on what he did this preseason. A game-winning touchdown the first week of the year for the first game of this preseason for the Jets. That was under 20 seconds remaining. He came in the second week with the Jets down 16-3. They come back and win that football game. And then a game-winning touchdown with only 22 seconds remaining. Fourth and goal, do or die. Chris Streveler finds Calvin Jackson on a fade route to the back corner of the end zone. Lisi, as we continue to go around NFL preseason football, just a final quick point about New York in terms of the Giants. It was Tyrod Taylor who was out there, took a huge hit early on, had to be carted back to the locker room. They're diagnosing it a back injury. We didn't see Daniel Jones at all, and Danny Dimes is going to be the starter for Brian Daboll's first year offense. But there was some conversation, Lisi, throughout camp that Tyrod Taylor got some run with the ones. So it is something to keep an eye on, what that backup QB situation looks like with the Giants.
Yeah, I always think that if we're talking Danny Dimes and Tyrod Taylor, Taylor has better upside in terms of leading this team to wins. He only threw 2 of 4 passes, completed 2 of 4, but it was Davis Webb that got a majority of the work, right? Davis Webb has looked good in the preseason. Here's a kid that, right, started at Texas Tech, moves to Cal, takes over after Jared Goff moves on to the NFL. I mean, Davis Webb has shown some moxie this year. I got to say this, you know what? If he doesn't stick with the Giants, he can maybe potentially stick around. If Sean Mannion's in the league and some of these other backups, you know, I mean, I would take Davis Webb in a heartbeat, but we'll see how it plays out for Tyrod Taylor. How long will he be out? And we talked about the short hook for Brian Daboll. I think there's no doubt if Danny Dimes doesn't lead this team to at least a close to 500 by the 8th game of the regular season and Tyrod Taylor's healthy, I think they give the reins to Tyrod the second half of the year. You know what you have in terms of projection and upside with Daniel Jones. So at the end of the day, I don't think he's the leader of this team and has never showed it in his tenure in New York.
And they haven't even renewed or picked up his fifth-year option of his rookie quarterback, DJ about to enter year number 4. The Jets' win total is at 5.5. It's a number they have gone over five of the last 6 years, never winning more than 7 games, even the 1 year they went over. The Giants' win total, Lisi, 7.5, and the under has the juice at minus 145. Big Blue under that number, 5 straight years, 8 of the last 9. So there is relative level of expectation for both New York teams entering this season. Our guy, though, Lisi, Justin Fields, looking really good in the Bears preseason finale. 14 of 16, 156 yards, 3 touchdowns, led TD drives of 80 yards, 52 yards, and 62 yards. The Bears get the win 21-20 in that preseason finale against the Browns. A good ending of this preseason for Justin Fields and Chicago. Hopefully the situation and the offensive tools that Justin Fields has at his disposal only improves throughout the 2022 NFL regular season, because that is the focus now, just 10 days away from the start of the NFL campaign. We come back on Football Full Circle next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A couple more minutes left here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. I am Ben Stevens, joined by Joe Lisi, of course, on this day here on FFC. And Lisi, at the end of the preseason yesterday, when all the games have been wrapped up, we got some sad news in the National Football League. Brian Robinson Jr., a rookie running back out of Alabama, a part of the Tide who got to the national championship game a season ago, was having a great training camp, a great preseason for the Washington Commanders, in an attempted carjacking yesterday, an attempted robbery in and around the D.C. area. Brian Robinson was shot multiple times. He has been released from the hospital. He was in stable condition at all times while under the medical care of the hospital, and now has been released. He is feeling good. He is feeling positive. He has told Ron Rivera that he is in high spirits, but a very sad moment for what was going to be the promising start of Brian Robinson's NFL career.
Yeah, absolutely. We wish Brian Robinson and his family the very best. Hopefully a speedy recovery, and obviously he would have provided depth behind Antonio Gibson. Let's not forget Brian Robinson, 204 yards in the college football playoff game against Cincinnati. So career high for him as well. So having a solid preseason, they're going to need him back if this running game is going to be effective to make either an NFC East title run or a playoff run later in the year.
Ron Rivera said last night that he just got done visiting with Brian. He's in good spirits and wanted me to thank everyone for their kind words, prayers, and support. Then on his Instagram story, only about an hour ago, Joe, Brian Robinson sharing out a photo and saying, "Surgery went well. Thanks for the prayers. God is great." A speedy recovery, hopefully, for Brian Robinson. This is not just about his football career, of course. His life is way more important. However, we hope he can get back on the football field very, very soon. soon and continue to do what he loves and what he enjoys doing the most. That does it for Football Full Circle today on the Sports Grid Radio Network. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. The Money Line with Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside is up next. Keep it locked right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.